Obviously, I'm 24.
Roger, it's good to see you.
I'd like to talk to you about this meeting. I don't trust the ambassador, and we can't ignore the possibility that his country is supporting Second Wave.
We want to prevent this incident.
We need access to your files.
I want you to monitor how they use our intel.
It's the ambassador's chopper. Crashed just after takeoff.
There's a man here who needs to talk to you.
Who is it?
He's from the government, a counterterrorism agency.
Told you before, I do not know a Saeed Ali.
How do you explain the fact that his name is in your personal computer files?
There's a nuclear bomb in Los Angeles. Do what I tell you. Go now.
Miguel, get over here, please.
He said there was a nuclear bomb in the city.
Well, let's get out of here.
No, we can't. Not without Megan.
George, I got to Wald. I found out who commissioned him to take out CTU.
Who was it?
It was Nina Myers.
Nina? Nina killed your wife. I don't want you anywhere near her.
You're going to have to grant her a shadow asylum.
That sounds like a pardon, sir.
She has information that could help us find this bomb.
What is it?
They're going to let her go.
George, I know you were exposed to high levels of radioactive materials this morning.
I want to know what your plans are for Nina.
I want the case. I know how she thinks.
If you don't do this, I'll phone District, tell them about your condition. They'll have you replaced within minutes.
The following takes place between 1 p.m. and 2 p.m.
Hi, I'm Sarah Clark. I play Nina Myers on the show.
And I'm John Kassar. I'm the director of this particular episode. Here we are, ticking clock. It's a good way to start a 24 always,
exactly.
The ticking clock.
I remember it was sort of one thing that was interesting about coming back. I'd just been on my honeymoon and I had a slight tan.
Which we had to deal with, considering you were supposed to be in jail for the last year and a half.
So we decided it's like I've been in the yards working.
That's right. We're working out.
Give me a rougher look.
This episode was very exciting for me as a director, because when you read it, I mean, right away you sort of go to the scenes you think are going to be the best. And when you see Jack Bauer gets to, you know, meet Nina Myers after what happened last year, I'll tell you, my heart was pumping even before I got past the last line.
Yeah.
So it was very exciting for me to be able to work with Sarah and Kiefer in this scene.
Yeah, I mean, it was also to come back and have CTU so destroyed and different was really affecting too as the character, because you get to come back knowing that there's been a big change. I've been in jail, but also to see the effects of the bomb that apparently I helped.
And the new people.
And the
new people involved. That's, I think, interesting too.
Definitely.
Of course, but as usual, it's not the only storyline. We have Palmer always working his way in.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the things I love about the show, too, that the constant storylines coming at you. And the audience is constantly, I mean, saying to me that every time they're in one story, we pull away from it. And so they're dying to come back to that story again. And I think in this case, too, is interesting because we already set you up in episode 5.
Right.
We already knew you were there. Jack knows you're there. So the anticipation for the scene where you finally get together is pretty high.
You know, it was different for me this year as last year I read all the other storylines because I knew so much of the information that Nina was accumulating about the hit on Palmer was affected in the other stories. But this year, was so isolated, my story, and it was really exciting when I'd come to watch a show because I hadn't taken them in as much as I had the year before.
That's going to probably help your character, too, because you were supposed to be a little isolated at this point anyways, being away. Definitely. This was also a fun episode because we got to bring Sherry back.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone, you know, within two episodes, we brought Nina back and Sherry back. The audience went crazy. I mean, two characters they loved from the first year, and two characters that give their men a hard time, to say the least. So this is Penny, and it's so much fun to work with her.
I need to talk to you.
We have nothing more to talk about. You're not my wife anymore, Sherry.
It's not.
See, you stop talking. They start. I know, you just get right? Totally into the scene. It's so amazing to watch them work.
I think Michelle's doing a great job too as his first aide. I don't know her exact job, but she's the dynamics between the three of these is really great.
Yeah, it's really funny because I remember in the scene too, Michelle. You know, she stood there at one point. And she said, "Well, I'll just keep going because I'm not in the scene." And I said, no, that's not 24. Yeah. We're all involved. Everybody's involved. And I said that the looks that I will cut into the show, there's one right there, is going to make all the difference to the world. Because even though you have no lines with Penny, it starts to set up the relationship right away.
Yeah.
That's what our show is about, is all these interwoven relationships. And as you can see in the scene, She's very much in the scene. Mm-hmm. She's very much alive, but her instinct right away is to just walk away and let them have their little thing. But it's always about the relationship between everybody.
Well, and it also shows you, too, I think, just how public the president's life
has
is.
To be.
He has very few moments of being alone, and that's why it's affecting when they are alone and what's revealed. But he's got an entourage around him constantly.
Except when he goes in this little room,
yeah.
Which is always conveniently placed for these kind of scenes. Which we do a lot of, again, on 24, our little private conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was fun, too, for Carlos Bernard, who plays Tony. He actually gets to leave CTU now. That doesn't sound like a big deal, but for Carlos it was, because pretty well all last year, except for one little outing, he was inside.
That's true.
And all this year, he was basically inside also. So this was his... is one venture out, and he was just so happy not to be in CTU. And he did a great job, and the fans also love the fact that he got out, and love the dynamics between the two of them. They started to call it Tony Gate.
Tony Day?
Yeah, Tony Gate, as in Watergate.
Gate.
I mean, he was just such a grueling interrogator on poor Reza here.
Yeah.
How's my racial profiling going now? I want a lawyer.
Did they find the black box yet?
Not yet, Mr. President.
Damn it, Roger. How could something like this happen?
I don't know, sir. I've opened a multi-agency investigation.
And
into
this is actually Stanton's first scene. Harris Yulin, who plays Stanton. This was the first scene we shot with him.
It's fantastic.
It was just such a pleasure to have him. Joel and I worked with him again on Nikita. And just a big fan of his work. And we're just happy to have him.
Happy about the ambassador's cooperation.
It's just authority with anything he says. It resonates in his face
amazing.
And his eyes.
I mean, here's another a great example. I mean, from a director's standpoint, you read a scene and it says three people stand in an elevator and you think, oh my God, how can I make that interesting? You know, three people stand there for a page and a half and talk in an elevator. But when you see the scene, you realize it's the faces. It's all about the faces, the looks,
mm-hmm.
the raised eyebrows. All of it is just that. That's a big part of our show. We don't need the visual eye candy that a lot of shows need. This is where our money is, right here. Most of last episode and this one, Jack Bauer keeps trying to convince Xander, who plays Mason, to let him talk to Sarah. So here it is. He's finally done it.
Jack, I don't have to remind you. The last time I let you interrogate somebody, you shot him through the heart.
I love that line.
I know. So I remember thinking that it was going to be a lot of built-up expectation of what this first encounter was going to be. And I remember thinking that I had to keep it all inside because it was all going to come out throughout the episodes.
Yeah, the various scenes.
But this first encounter had to just be really internal with both of us, because there's so much going on, there's so much that could be said, and you had to just stick to the immediate, because normally they would just want to go at each other right away.
It was a great choice, too. I think it was a great choice by you, Sarah. I mean, Kiefer's usually there anyways in that in that very internal place, but I think this is great for both of you to play that beat.
Well, and just to see where they can go, you know, you have to start and build up.
It's almost like two fighters in a ring,
just
sizing each other up. You know, it's been a long time. Where's this punch going to come from?
Let's keep this simple. If you want to stop the bomb, I need to be on a plane to Visalia now.
I remember I hadn't seen Kiefer either for a while. So it was, I mean, and he was saying the same thing. He was like, he'd been away. His character, whatever, the shooting schedule had kept him off set for a little bit. And I had gotten married and then came back. So there was a lot of things that were keeping us away from the reality of the first season and not having come in contact. And so it was very powerful, even just the reunion of the two of us.
Now, your look was really interesting here, too. Everyone commented on how absolutely different you looked from last year.
Yeah. I really wanted to make a point to show that, you know, last year it was all about trying to be a woman in a man's world, and you're trying to also be together and be appealing, but after being in jail for
it just becomes about survival.
Exactly, and I just wanted it to be really rough. I wanted no makeup. I wanted it mean, it was great because I'd come in, be in hair and makeup for 5 minutes.
But, but even in performance, I mean, there's a great example where he flips that table over and you don't even flinch. Yeah. I mean, and we cut to Mason and Michelle and they're flinching by what just happened. And there's just this solid look because you know that there's nothing he can do to you at this point.
Right. Remember the smile too. We had we had so many versions of how the smile could go.
What's going to set him off?
Exactly. You know? I'm just going to have to follow my lead.
And we played with it and played with it, but I think we ended up with the perfect Mona Lisa right there.
Now this is really interesting too, because remember when he was holding, this was the first take, and I didn't know how long the scene was going to go, so I was holding my breath to match with this. If he was holding me, I blew out all the air. Look, and I didn't know it. We kept going.
Sometimes it's not acting.
Exactly, and I was like, wow, that was really effective. But then by the third time we did that thing against the wall, I was like, you know what, I could use like a little padding on the back of the elbow, the old shoulder blades.
Got a little
I
real.
Thought I was so tough. But it helped.
You know, I think you're right. I think we did end up using the first one because there was a little tinge of blue happening there.
No, but it worked. And I think that way they used the two boxes there of Xander running.
Yeah, running it at the
so
same time.
So effective. Yeah. I love that.
But again, just a fantastic scene. I also remember, too, we had 4 hours or a morning, 6 hours, whatever it is, production time to shoot the scene. And we were well into our eighth or ninth hour shooting that one portion or a little bit of. And I just remember, people saying, we got to move on. We got to get going. And I just said, you know what? This is our show. I'll make anything else shorter. We're going to take all the time we need to make this work because it's such a big part of our episode. Yeah, we did. We took our time, and I think it shows.
Yeah. We definitely got to explore all the nuances of what was going on between the two of them to establish where they start, because the arc does go in such a crazy ride.
Yeah, and even just within one episode. It's such a massive arc that happens within the one episode, and it's a little game they're playing, which I also love, that everyone's, each one of them keeps one-upping each other through the whole thing.
It was interesting, too, because of all the times we shot the scene and then we'd have to do it for video.
That's right.
And so there was knowing, okay, in this moment, and I remember thinking, who's watching me right now? That was always, I always knew that there was going to be an entourage of people, as Nina, the CTU employees, would be watching me to look for breaks, to look to see if I was going to break anything.
You have to be on the whole time.
Exactly. And so there's all the reactions of, when someone's in the room with you and then when they're gone and knowing what they're looking for.
That's right.
I had to kind of keep all that and play the cameras to know, well, this moment they're going to be looking at this.
Because
this is her world. This is where she was. She knows exactly what they're doing to her.
And I think it was great because I think the video kept you alive. The scene we just saw and then the other act, it was the two of them arguing about you, but you're right there.
Right.
You're always present.
Yeah.
And we really took advantage of it in episode 5 because one of my biggest problems was that you were here and Jack was there, but you weren't together yet.
Exactly.
And it drove me crazy that you weren't together. So my way of putting it together was getting you on a monitor.
Mm-hmm.
So you, from the audience point of view, you're already getting a little preview. Here they are. Look, they're close. They're getting closer. So it was really nice. It was a good device to keep you in play.
Definitely.
I dropped out of school when Mom died to take care of you. To keep this family together.
Yeah, and so you'd have an excuse for not having a relationship. You could
so to do that kind of video work, there's two ways we did it. One, we taped some of it. And then in some of the scenes where you actually see two people in front of the monitors and Sarah in the room, she was actually doing it live. We actually had a monitor there and then had her fed through because that way she could time all of it too. So that was our way of connecting it all.
And
I don't know if you knew what we were doing out there. Probably not. You just needed to watch
it. No, it was great, though, because I knew that John had the vision all tied together where I didn't know, and I was not supposed to know what was happening out there. So John could direct me in terms of, like, okay, we need a little more to camera left, or we need it more to camera right. We need this moment.
Or don't look.
Exactly, yeah.
And those were the important parts.
It really was helpful because instead of trying to sort of second guess and create a world that he could then catch, he could orchestrate it to tell the story what needed to be told. So it was.
And it worked out very well.
Yeah, it was very helpful.
Regarding the sources of her injuries are resolved.
Of course. I just want to do what's best for my little girl.
Good. I'll check in on her at the end of my runs.
Mr. Matheson. No cell phones in the hospital. They interfere with the equipment.
So the difference this year for me, last year I only directed two episodes. And in fact, with Sarah, we had a fabulous scene in one of the episodes where Leslie Hope, who plays Jack Bauer's wife, finds out that Nina was the affair that Jack had. So it was probably my favorite scene that I shot last year. But again, I only did the two episodes. And this year, I'm involved and I'm doing 10 episodes. And this year, I'm here from the very beginning. So it's very different because I'm involved in all aspects of making this year work. And so last year, I was more of a guest. This year, I'm here as the regular guy. So it was really interesting because even last year, I never really had any scenes with Sarah and Kiefer together. We had a couple of phone calls, but they weren't really scenes like this, like you're about to see now. So it was fun for me to get to work with Sarah and Kiefer in this capacity.
Yeah. Oh, no, this is interesting, because this is when we had the squibs.
Yeah.
And that is so
That's,
realistic.
Again, real fear. Yeah, those are little explosions that are actually, they're not put in later. They actually happened, and they were very close to, safe, but very close to Sarah's head.
And it's really interesting, too, because I was wearing earplugs, you know, and so it's like to do it and hear yourself talking, it almost heightens the fear because it's like all you have is your own, like, breathing and hearing your voice and hearing Kiefer's small, you know, smaller voice.
Right.
And it definitely escalated the adrenaline that was going on.
And this is interesting, too, because we used to have a scene before this where we see him get the gun and We never even shot it because we just felt that it's way better. If she's going to be surprised, let's be surprised with her.
Yeah.
And I think it worked.
If you knew how to get to him, you wouldn't need me anymore, and the deal I made wouldn't do me much good if I'm dead.
It's funny how those shakes come in, too. The adrenaline,
again,
the shakes.
Start to happen.
Yeah, you just do it. It just happens. I mean, guns are powerful, powerful things, and I had never shot a gun or held a gun before this show. And to do that was all of a sudden, I mean, it was terrifying. It blew me back the first time.
How much power.
And then
person's life in your hands.
You see just like the adrenaline that it infuses in your body.
Again, this scene was another wonderful, you know, one-upmanship.
Yeah.
You know, now Jack wins this round.
Right.
It's like two fighters round after round. It was really fun to play that dynamic.
Right. I remember thinking after each round too, it's like I did. It was like a scorecard. I'm like, okay, I've got this.
Who won
that
one?
He's got that. I've got this. He's got that. And how much can I reveal in terms of where we need to go?
Do we know where this order came from?
And of course, it's really interesting because underlying through the whole thing, although you know all the scenes were very plot driven about this year and about the bomb and revealing who had the bomb, we all know that it's completely about something else, and it's about Terry and what happened last year and the betrayal. So it's really interesting, I think, from your end, and I'll ask you that question. How was that to play? Because although, again, it was all about, you know, this year's plot, what was it like playing that underlying sort of tension that was really left unresolved by the end of last year?
Well, anytime, I mean, I found when you play someone who's unsympathetic because of actions they might have done, you have to justify in your head why you did these things, and you have to make yourself sympathetic to yourself. Otherwise, you're just, you know, despicable, and no one wants to watch you. No one wants to even understand who you are. So that was one of the major challenges because, you know, there was always a reason why I had to do what I had to do last year.
Right.
And then killing Terry, I knew that was crossing a line. I knew that was crossing something huge. And then after being in jail, I had to decide, okay, nobody understands my pain. No one understands my story. And so it's about keeping that sacred space to yourself and knowing that no one out there is going to get it. And that's what you're slowly revealing through the episodes. And so to play that thing with Kiefer, it wasn't replaying in my head what I did to him. It's like I'm thinking what you did to me, what I was forced to do kind of thing. And so,
which is probably more real anyways, I think, from your point of view.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you think about, you know, all the characters on these shows, on this show, they're forced to do things that they normally wouldn't do under sane circumstances.
Right.
But the world has been turned upside down for these people, and you know, especially this year with the nuclear bomb, with incoming terrorists, and how it's affecting their lives. They have to justify for themselves doing things they never would have done.
So it's ordinary people in extraordinary circumstances.
Exactly. And I think one thing that was really interesting for me this year as opposed to last year, I mean, there were a couple rough scenes last year, but the emotions that would come up playing such intense scenes, I mean, starting with these, but then the way they've escalated, that was something that me, Sarah Clark, had to to keep in check, because they would come up and I think, no, these people are used to this. Right. They're used to this right. sense of adrenaline, this right. anger, this emotionality. It doesn't normally come in the way of what they're doing. And so that was something I was constantly struggling with, like whether it was feeling the effects of the gun or yelling or being thrown around. Yeah. You have to...
The difference between Nina Myers and Sarah
yeah,
Clark and how
exactly.
they would...
Exactly. I come home and be like, ah, no.
Okay. Yeah, it's not that easy to turn on and off.
The
People
world
don't
is
understand.
So big.
But, yeah.
No, but it was also a blast to get to play someone that's just in such a position of power. I mean, it's a weird position of power, yeah. but to come in and know that so much attention is being put on what you know and what you can change in the world, it's a strange, strange, you know.
Well, especially when you have the one up on the lead hero, Jack
exactly.
Bauer. That doesn't happen often.
That doesn't,
so I think it was really interesting.
It's an interesting tension.
Of course, it's really nice. This little girl is fabulous.
Oh my gosh, she's so good.
Sky is great, and I think together they were really interesting to watch.
Yeah.
Poor Kim, she's always in such peril, but she gets out of it.
Yeah.
Great.
Again, it's all the storylines, I think, that makes it really interesting. And you know, as you're watching this, you know that Nina and Jack are stewing there somewhere and just waiting to get back to it. Now, interesting too, we tossed the what we were going to call you around a little bit off the top, because Nina Myers, of course, wasn't your real name.
Right.
So,
oh gosh, I hadn't thought about that.
So you know, your sort of foreign name came up a few times, but everyone just kept thinking, you know what, no one's ever going to remember her
well,
like that.
I thought, you mean so, Yelena?
Yelena, right.
I thought that was just a cover
yeah.
while I was talking on the phone. Yeah.
Well,
see, this is so funny.
I guess,
story
yeah. I guess, yeah, it was.
That was, I thought, the cover.
Yeah,
Nina
yeah.
was my American name
we
and my
exactly
American identity.
Doing.
You knew exactly what you were.
Because I know even some of the fans right away was like, that's not her name. It's not Nina Myers. It's Yelena. And we were just, you know what? We know her as Nina Myers. We want her to be Nina Myers. I
yeah.
think it's stronger for us. So we stuck to Nina Myers.
Yeah.
This is interesting, too. This hospital is a closed-down hospital in Pasadena, which has become a set for many, many pictures.
Oh, really?
It's one production company after another are in there. In fact, Tarantino was just coming in to do a movie right after we finished using it. So, and we actually went back again this year to the same hospital. It's virtually ready to go. There's nothing you need to do. Put a few extras and some props, and you've got yourself a hospital. So that's always handy for when you're doing a television show. You can't afford to build everything, and especially a hospital with as many floors and staircases. You just can't afford to build all that, so you try to find something like this, and it was perfect. I think it'd been abandoned for about a year, so it was virtually ready to go.
I need you to breathe and calm down and stop crying so we can leave now, okay?
Come on.
Where is my mom? I want my mom.
I know. Come on. I know.
Continuity is such a big, worry for people that are involved in it, because you can see the change so fast from one scene to the next if you're not on it. And this year it was a little easier because I didn't have makeup and my hair just needed to be tousled around and I'm sweaty.
A little less time in the trailer.
Yeah, a little less time before in the prep work. But usually what it was is you shoot by location, right?
That's
so
right.
As an actor, you'll come in, we do two episodes at a time, and you can have five really intense days and get all your stuff, your work done. So you come in for those days ready with both episodes in your head and where you need to go. And at least for me, what I would do is map out how, you know, the episode should go. So at every point, if we're breaking or even switching around, I'd say, okay, at this point, this is where I am. Because, you know, you've got 5 or 10 minutes that you need to account for, but that's it. Everything else is there. So it was, in that sense, it was like making a movie, because you guys are really good about shooting things in order, more or less.
We try as much as we can to shoot in order, but really, location's always what drives the schedule, unfortunately. So,
yeah. But within the location, it seems.
But within the location, you try to stay. In fact, we did in this. I insisted on it because
I thought it was so important for the build. I thought
that the build had to be realistic. So we virtually shot this in order. I mean, we shot, you know, from when you first met him right till when.
Okay, can I say something right now?
Yeah.
The anklets killed every time we walked. I was like, I have to look tough, and they hurt so much. I remember
hey, you did a good job.
A couple times with me tripping.
We're tripping, that's right.
We were just trying to do the trip, and I was like, no. But yeah, they. I thought, God, these guys have to be so tough. Like, even the little anklets
hurt. Down,
kill. And I imagine to walk with some authority.
But, you know, our usual shooting day is 12 hours, and that's mm-hmm. from when we bring the crew in to when we wrap. And that's still a pretty long day with a half-hour lunch. And when you do that every day for, you know, 7 months, it gets you a little bit. Thank God we have the Christmas break, but that's basically what it is. In this show, it's a little different because we have so many characters that, as Sarah says, everyone's in blocks. Even Kiefer sometimes will have a week and a half off of shooting. He usually has other things to do and ADR and promotion, but basically his shooting schedule sometimes maybe is only 5 or 6 days within the 15 days it takes us to shoot both episodes. So when we're doing Palmer, for example, as in this scene, and Penny, they'll come in, do their 4 days. We'll do all their scenes on their sets while they're lit, all in as much order as we can, and then they're done for the episode. So it's nice, I think, for the actors because they're not in every day. Because when you're doing a show where you're in every single day as an actor, when you're Magnum PI and your face is there, Tom Selleck, in every single scene, after a while it does get very tiring. There is no break. There's no time to recuperate. There's no time to build your energy back up. Where in this case, it's really nice because the ensemble is as big as it is, and we have four storylines sometimes. Everybody comes in, does their thing, and then gets some time to get the next scripts in their head and get ready. And I think they want to come back that way. I think they're excited to come back again, as opposed to, oh, no, not another day.
Right. Well, and it was interesting. Last year we had so many, my character had so many phone calls that you come in to do the off-camera of the phone call to keep the rhythm and the pacing the same when you're shooting both sides. And it just helps having the real actor there as opposed to someone trying to just read and keep up. And this year, I'm
didn't
a terrorist.
Have any
phone calls. I don't get any phones.
Nice,
I don't even get my one phone call.
That's
where
right.
was it? No, but it really was in blocks because usually it's broken up when you're not shooting. You're still very much in the story because you're there for the off camera.
And just to explain what Sarah was saying too is a lot of shows when you're on the other side of a phone call. If I'm shooting Sherry and Palmer's calling her, then Palmer is usually played by the script coordinator and she'll just do all his lines because you think, why bring him in? It's only one page. He's not on camera. What we found out very early in this show is because every phone call we do goes to boxes, you actually need the rhythm of the actor doing the lines. And that rhythm has to be pretty well perfect because otherwise when you have the two faces up at the same time, it doesn't sync and you have to constantly cut. You can't do 3 or 4 lines where both faces are on at the same time. And Kiefer was a big part of it too, wanting the real actors on there because we realized that a big part of our show was phone calls.
Yeah.
And if you didn't take them seriously, if you didn't play them as if the actor was standing right there, they'd start to diminish how important they were in the show.
And just so even the nuances of what actors would do, you could change it slightly with each read, and it's nice to have the real voice, remembering how they shot the scene.
Yeah.
And then
and the pauses,
right
I think
back.
The pauses are the biggest thing, because someone reading it off camera just kind of reads it. They try to be that person, but it's very difficult. So we're probably, it's the only show I've ever worked with where every actor will come in and do all their off camera. And sometimes Kiefer has nothing but that. He'll come in for 3 days in a row and just sit there in his civvies and just do the other side of phone calls and does it quite happily, as everyone did. I don't think anyone ever complained about coming in and doing the phone calls. But again, I think it shows, all these little things you do show in the final episode.
Definitely.
We meet Reza's parents.
Oh, yeah.
And this was a real interesting storyline because I think everyone were really very confused right at the very beginning, thinking, why do we care about this wedding? And I think episode by episode, you could tell the fans were just slowly starting to understand, starting to see that it was all connecting. And, of course, once Carlos came, I think this episode and the one before, when Tony Almeida finally comes to interrogate Reza, everyone started to go, okay, we get it now. We get it. We shouldn't have been complaining. We should have just been patient. We know. This is 24. It all works this way. But again, the parents were another layer to Reza and his background.
Not too bad.
Where is Reza? And it's, I think, interesting for the new characters this year too, because last year, I mean, you know, you can comment on this when you first started. You probably didn't really have an idea of what this monster was and how it all played. And I know for sure you didn't know you were the mole until very later on.
Right.
But still, even just when you were first starting, what was that like, sort of as new characters on this new TV show?
It seemed like a world that we were discovering together in a way. I mean, we came in, and in terms of our jobs and the hierarchy within the CTU and who was in charge of who. I mean, it was sort of understood that Jack was the boss, and then there was division.
Whoever they were.
They were like this ominous, you know, higher-ups that we would often refer to. But in terms of just the dynamics that would happen, say, between Tony and I, or Jamie and I, or a new character come in like Milo, those things were constantly evolving. And we were always asking questions, like if Chappelle would come in and then Mason would come in, well, who's above who and how do we refer to them? And, you know, there was a lot of questions in terms of protocol within the agency, like how much is revealed, how personal do you get? Because it was an unexplored territory. It's CIA. People just don't talk about it much, and especially counterterrorist unit. You know, you think they're dealing with such high crisis information all the time that their little
inside
dramas probably don't register, but a blip. So are these people just automatons, or are they real people? And so discovering all that was really fun. And
but I think that's what came through, that they are real people.
Yeah,
and
they
do have other problems and relationship problems amongst themselves,
right?
Which but I think made it interesting.
Yes, but I do think, too, that it's like it always comes back down to the job. And it's how they deal with those things within the context of such a high-pressure situation that's why people sympathize with them more, because in life we all put our human drama is probably first, and then
that's right.
To have that pushed aside, but still very much alive in an undercurrent to this other huge crisis, right. is very sympathetic. I mean, I think it's interesting, and it was definitely interesting to play as an actor, because you have that duality always.
Right.
You know,
and it's really interesting because that duality is something that you sort of paved the way for all the new people this year, because you know, all of them did their homework and they all saw the DVDs and
right.
saw the show. And so as a director, when I said to them, look, at the end of the scene, I just want you to give him a little look, there was no question.
Like what
No one said to me, what does that look about? What does it mean? Everyone's like, fine, I got it. It's a 24 look. Because a lot
of the times,
because the scripts are developing and very organic, you never know what it is. And you have the option later in editing of putting it in or not. So I remember our very first scenes with Carlos and Michelle and all the sort of the new CTU people, and Carlos, of course, knew the game. They were just very happy to give me whatever looks I asked for, because they had seen the show and they knew what it was about. So you paved the way for that suspicion, that underlying undercurrent. And every scene had to have it. Even though whatever was happening above, whatever plot-driven scene was about, we knew that underneath always had to be another layer. And I think that's a big part of the show.
Yeah, the boxes, too, were a big thing that we started to realize needed to be there too. So when you did look and have the, even like where we're coming up to now, when we start off and they want to just establish where we are, so we know that you're panning up, you're showing this.
That's right.
There's a lookout before we start, like that. We just know the rhythm of what
of
they're trying
show.
To establish with each storyline, and the beginning and endings of scenes.
This was a great scene. I remember it was late at the end of the day, and we had a huge day, and we got to this, and of course we're not in a moving vehicle. This is a vehicle parked in our studio, and we do some lighting effects, so it makes it look like we're moving.
Right.
But
this is great, the way Guy, our camera operator, got this pretty much between his shots, right? I mean, he just went back and forth and
it's a big style of our show. And what you see back there is a projection screen, basically, where we go out and we shoot whatever road we think we're going to be on with video cameras, and then we project them on this very big screen. And it gives you the illusion of movement. Now, you don't see it much here because it's a virtually windowless vehicle except for the one window at the back. So you don't get to see the back screens. And again, this was a fantastic scene where Sir did, I think, a wonderful job on this little speech that she gives to Jack.
Get glycerin all over my head. Everyone's like so thirsty. I'm like, I purposely ate something really salty before we started. But I remember it was really fun working with the writers on this, actually, in terms of what was going to be, because there was a certain path that I chose in terms of how I was going to reveal what I was implying, what I was intending to Jack. And the writers were really great with helping me come up with how slowly I revealed it, the wording of it, and I think it was really effective in the end here when we just have to stare each other down and not know, like, where it's going, why I'm starting this little sort of, you know, it seems like, oh, is she flirting with the guy?
Yeah,
like, whole, like, trying to be buddy-buddy with the character Miller, and to see that stonewalled, and you see, really, she's talking to Jack through Miller.
Through Miller, which I really liked. And I think Jack had a line or two, but we just cut them all out. I think it was just so interesting that he just... Yeah. Sat there in complete silence and just listened, mm-hmm. and knew that everything, of course, was directed to him.
The citizens of this country were murdered today, probably by the same people you're funding.
Carlos was, again, very happy to be doing this kind of scene, because after a while in CTU, and you could probably address this too, CTU is the place you come back to that drives the plot all the time, where a lot of the information is being shoveled out. Now, again, it's a little different because we do have the undercurrent of the relationships within CTU, which is fun, but when Carlos gets to do something like this, it's so much fun for him. Sort of just being back at CTU on the phone, mm-hmm. shoveling information, basically. So.
Well, yeah, and last year, because, you know, it went Jack, me, then Tony.
That's right.
In terms of power, you know, he was left having to just be told, go do this, go do that. And this year, he gets a lot more authority, which it's is
a lot more authority.
Fun.
And I think they were just wonderful here. Philip... Mm-hmm. Reza, I think, was also...
Yeah.
The two of them together were just so much fun to watch. And again, a great moment here for a reveal of who was behind it all. Or so we think at the time, of course. Again, this is something really interesting that we do on the show. It's always about looking at people through windows and through things. And it just gives you that feeling like you're watching the same way they are. I remember realizing, too, when he had to handcuff him, that Philip was much taller than Carlos. The whole time, Philip was sitting and Carlos was standing over him, which blocking-wise, I think, made sense. But this one point, and Carlos said it, too. He commented, he went, he's a tall guy.
That's funny. Well, it's like Palmer. Palmer's huge. I had to do a scene with him. I was like, I look like such a shrimp. I was like, can I stand on the table while we do
absolutely
this?
Everybody looks up to Dennis. Everybody.
People think I'm a lot taller when I'm from the show, and then they meet me. I mean, I'm not even 5'4", and they just can't get over it. They're just like,
but
we think you're a
giant.
You look
so tough. You look so absolutely tough.
Well, I remember thinking that when I came in, that first scene when I walked in with the... With the handcuffs around what are they called, ankle cuffs?
Yeah.
Thinking, I'm supposed to look so tough, and I have like three bodyguards, and I'm so teeny.
But
I
you did
puff myself
but
up.
But it's funny how you don't. I mean, again, I think it's your attitude. It probably gives you that extra 6 inches easy.
Exactly.
Six inches of attitude.
It did teach me something about having to, you know, be in a world that you think is out to get you. You have to puff yourself up, like, you know, it's almost... You know, primitive, like with the birds, they puff themselves up to look bigger. Anyways, you do. This guy was scary, I have to say. Every time he came on, he made me very nervous.
That was an accident!
He was a wonderful actor. And again, as most bad guys go, nicest guy in the world.
Yeah.
As they always are.
These fight scenes look really real, too.
Yeah, again, they're a little different, although our kung fu kick got a few comments, but hey, why not?
It's Miguel.
A young guy.
Why
can
he
know martial arts? Why not? And this is a young actor, too, named Innes. He's actually a bit of a rock star in the Latino world and has a huge following for his music, and this was really one of the first things he did as an actor, and I did a look at that. Look how pretty they look together. I just couldn't believe what a great couple they made. But it's one of the first things he did, so I think he did a great job.
The final scene in the van is coming up.
And it was interesting, too, because it's not actually the final scene in the script. In the script, the final scene is the first scene of the next episode. It was a scene where they get to the airport and, you know, she tries to tell on Jack. She says, look, he drugged the guy. And you find out, of course, that Jack had friends help him, and it didn't matter that he drugged the guy. When we saw it in the cut, we thought, you know what? The moment is when Jack looks at her, and she looks at him, and she knows that Jack won this round. And we thought, that's where we have to end this show. And that's what we did. And so the editor and I sort of made that the end and gave the other scene to the next episode.
I think that was a really great choice.
Which is a great plus for us, because we can do that. We can kind of slide scenes back and forth.
And that's how you extend time. I mean, What was interesting, too, was knowing that we were coming to the airport. And at this point, I'm sure everyone was like, what is the deal with the water? Like, why do they keep showing
this? Why are they also darn thirsty?
So thirsty and so hot. So why don't they take off their jackets? I think some people thought it was me that had drugged him.
Right, yeah. Like I remember some people saying that, actually.
Yeah, because there's a reveal. You'll see it coming up. But this guy, Brian, did a wonderful job with incorporating sort of, you know, the thirst, the anger, and then his job towards Jack, and then the effects of the drugs. It's good.
I like the way he looks at Jack, too, as he starts to pass out. Jack, like, Mommy. Help.
I know.
And it's really interesting, too, because Kiefer almost nurtured him as he started to pass out, knowing that, you know, he's the one that drugged him, so.
Yeah.
But again, I think it's fun, too, because, you know, Jack has just a complete bad boy side to him this year, and the fact that he would drug one of his own agents.
Completely. But look, here's the moment where it's like.
And you start to realize,
uh-oh. But people are like, is it working yet?
Sorry, dude. It's all right. Just.
And I could tell.
I remember the bottle. We was like, oh,
yeah. There was that specific light that I think we did it three or four times because I just wanted to see that eye. He almost looked demonic, and there's a little smile here that I think is just
like
priceless. And of course, back to you going, uh-oh.
And so we just thought we did it two times too because you're like, do we look? And then she looks out the window like, oh no.
Oh no!
But no, I like the way we did it that way much better. I think that was one of my favorite episodes to work on,
ditto.
For sure.
It was fun to work on. It was a great episode to work on.
Yeah. And definitely set the precedent for all the stuff to come.
Yeah, exactly.
Was equally fun.